Yes, definitely.
Yes, definitely. Today is November 24th, 2018, and this is Karen Brewster with Kathleen Dalton at her home in Fairbanks, joined by her daughter, Libby Dalton. So, what did you have in mind you wanted to talk about today?
I wanted to talk about the formation of a pioneer group, a fun group, nothing serious about them. That two other people and I, and three other people that I formed in 1989 at the mouth of the 40 Mile River.
Okay, and what was that group called?
Arctic Sisterhood.
Uh-huh. And that's what this photograph is of?
That's out in Fairbanks Creek.
Oh. But you guys are wearing sashes that say AS.
Arctic Sisterhood.
So that's you in the whitish hat. And then who's the woman standing next to you?
I think that's Alaska Link. I'd have to look at that.
And then,
I don't know if you can see it in the white.
Do you recognize RCMPs? That's Alaska.
That's Alaska Link with you?
Yes. In order, left to right.
Okay.
Jack Williams.
Okay.
Vuka Stepovich. Mm-hmm. Alaska Link, Mike Dalton, and Ken Murray.
Okay.
And those are the charter members of the Arctic Sisterhood, right?
Not with the men. We invited them to join as associate members that day and decided we would accept them because we liked them.
They were honorary members.
Honorary, well, we call them associate members.
Okay. So did you and Alaska Link, you were the charter founders? Who else, was there anybody else with you?
Yeah, Mrs. I was going to talk about that briefly.
Okay.
Alaska Link.
Mm-hmm.
And Vuka Stepovich.
Okay.
And Crystal Morgan. Crystal McQuested Morgan.
So is this when you were on the river trip on the 40 mile?
No, that was after we finished that.
Okay.
And a couple of times after hiking the trail, we'd have little get-togethers, reunions to talk about the trip and just reminisce. I'll talk about that here in a minute. I'm going to focus on Susie for a minute.
Susie Swain.
Her picture was in the paper a couple of days ago.
Yeah, I saw an obituary for her, so I didn't know. Who is she?
Who is she?
Yeah, tell me about her.
At the bottom of the stairs on University Hill, that corner, she used to live there. Next door to Earl Beislein, Donald Cook and his family.
Okay.
Anyway, Susie Swaim died two or three days ago. Did not surprise me. She's 95. Frail little lady in her later years, but made of steel. She was kind of a community activist in college for years. You wouldn't think it to look at her. She's just a little lady. And anyway, every year we have a big cleanup here in Fairbanks.
Yeah, cleanup day?
Cleanup day. The community of college started college cleanup 40, 50 years ago. Hmm. It was Susie who had organized that. She was a member of the College Women's Club, and they would organize events. And that was one event they started early on. I have to remember to not make noise.
No, it's okay. You can make noise when you... We don't want you choking.
So if there are too many candy wrappers, cigarette packages, junk on the corner there, mm-hmm. she would pick it up. And her husband, Claude, worked at the agricultural station. Mm-hmm. You'd walk to work, of course. It's pretty close.
Yeah.
He must have carried little plastic bags in his pocket or something. If he ran across a little bit of garbage on the ground, he'd pick it up, put his bag, take it to the dump. Which at that time was South Fairbanks someplace. Mm-hmm. But this is way, way before the borough organized.
So what, is this in the 60s or the 50s?
The borough form actually went into legal formation as a municipal government on January 1st, 1964.
Okay.
Before the flood, mm-hmm. before the big earthquake.
Right, so when... Susie, when they were living down there at the bottom of University Hill and all that, that was in the late 50s?
Well, when they came here, they bought a cabin there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of university stories revolve around the cabins, the
yeah.
dry cabins. You know, so just there's one over here. They're all over the place. And there's some really... interesting stories that occurred in some of those cabins. If you can talk to some people who started out there and they're still in town and make a really good series of stories.
Okay. Yeah, because those cabins aren't there anymore.
No, they're gone. Pretty much gone. Well, on the day that statehood issue passed the Senate, everybody in town celebrated somewhere or other. Ben Atkinson, after whom the power plant was named, I don't know what University Power Plant is named now.
Well, I don't know. The old one was Ben Atkinson. I don't know if they've yeah. moved that over to the new one.
Yeah, they may have incorporated that into
yeah.
the new addition.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ben Atkinson... Magnuson, what was his last name? First name. This another one of the people from the campus. And Jim Cox, he also worked on campus. They were all friends.
Mm-hmm.
They all met each other in one cabin or another daily or weekly or whatever. Instead of having a coffee clutch, they would have drink beer, like a lot of them, or more.
Mm-hmm.
More. Anyway, I went downtown with a friend of mine driving my truck. It wasn't a pickup truck, but it was a big truck we'd used here when we built this house. And so people went downtown, formed automobile honking little parades, two or three cars or 15 mm-hmm. or 20 cars. So... These people I just named, let's see. Magnuson and Atkinson, you got those two names.
Yeah.
And Jim Cox.
Right.
And there was a man named, I'll think of it later. There were, I think, five of them there. And they drank all the beer they had. This was told to me by Jim Cox, who was sober when he told it to me. But when they were celebrating over there, they were not sober. They, in celebration of statehood, they had this little gathering and drank all the beer that they had and all the whiskey that they had. And it was right after, soon after Fairbanks got television. That was years coming here.
Yeah.
So it was unusual for anybody to have a television set. Anyway, they got to the point where the mixed drink they were drinking, they were running out of alcohol. So somebody suggested they finish off their celebration by breaking the glass that they were holding. So they drank it down and they emptied the glass and then threw it down so it'd break. Then the next one would do the same. They went around, everybody topped off his or drank, emptied his glass, mixed, you know, scotch and water, mm-hmm. bourbon and water, whatever it was. And then they break the glass. Then they ran out of glasses. They ran out of cups. They were using coffee cups, that were China cups. But, you know, anything they could put their drinks in. So that those were, that supply was exhausted. So the celebration kind of mellowed a little bit. And then he said, they realized they didn't have to have a glass or a cup. They could break the window. So they went around and found all the windows in that cabin. It's still there. They broke all the windows in there. They got them all broken. Then they went back and sat down and said, well, what the hell? There's still some glass here, the television set. So they all aimed at the television set. So they blew that up with whatever they could find to throw at it. And gradually the party ended and they all managed to get home safely. I'm not sure whose cabin it was, but it might have been, I think it might have been Ernie Wolfe's.
Well, it's quite the celebration of statehood.
Yeah.
That's what they were celebrating, was statehood?
Yes, yeah. The U.S. Senate passed the statehood bill that day.
Right.
We'd been fighting for that for a long time. So they broke everything they could find in the television set. And I guess the fun part of the party was over, so they dissipated and went home. They all got home safely.
Well, that's good.
I don't know what happened in other cabins down there, but there were some really good parties down in those cabins.
Yeah. I don't know what the owner of the cabin might have thought to come and see all the windows broken.
Oh, he knew these guys.
Yeah.
They were all good. They replaced everything.
Oh, that's good. So, did you want to say more about Susie Swaim?
Yeah, well, that was part of Susie Swaim's adopted project. Gathered up, sent the word out. We didn't have internet then. We did have telephones.
Mm-hmm.
So she got the word out to go to Magnuson's cabin. We'll meet at Magnuson's cabin. We'll pick up so the kids in the neighborhood knew always when there was a little project like that they'd get a treat afterwards.
To help pick up the trash.
Mm-hmm. And it's surprising what little 6 and 7, 8-year-old boys and girls will do if they know they can get a hot dog afterwards. So it was a type of thing that just was not unusual. Susie kind of, so anyway, what I wanted to point out here is that the College Women's Club created the city cleanup day. Mm-hmm. And I'm about 2 miles from where Susie's cabin was. But they even reached out to me, and I had my 2 children. We went down. Our part of the annual cleanup was to pick up trash in this area. Mm-hmm. We'd go down Yankovich Road, down Dalton Trail, and first we'd clean up our own yard before we used our, we can't use our energy on the neighbor's junk. Right. We need to clean our, up our own. Well, we were pretty good about that. But the point of my even talking about this, that this is one of the projects that Susie Swaim created, and it goes every year.
Yeah, it's still going.
It inspired a lot of parents, mm-hmm. not children. They always look forward to oh, do I have to? Oh, yeah, we're going to have a picnic after. Oh, do I get a hot dog? Oh, yeah, get a hot dog and ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great project that she started because, as you say, it's still going on.
That was back in the 40s and 50s. I and my 2 children became involved in the, see, in the late 50s. Mm-hmm. They weren't too excited about it, but it kind of instilled a little.
It had to be later than that, Mom. I was born in the 50s, so had
oh,
to be
yeah.
in the 60s.
Maybe early 60s. 60s
yeah.
Early 60s.
Early 60s, yeah.
What was Magnuson's first name?
Vince.
Vince Magnuson.
Yeah, Vince, V-I-N-C-E, for Vincent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magnuson.
Okay.
And there's one other name I'm trying to think of, and I'll get that to, okay. It'll come to me soon. Okay. Anyway, that's one project. Mm-hmm. And another project that she started that died was the Tanana Valley Fair. She was always involved in that and encouraged people to enter. We used to do a lot of knitting and crocheting and mm-hmm. handwork and cooking, and so a lot of us entered. But the main thing the College Women's Club did, that was before the 60s. ...1959 and before. That's how I'll date it. Was the annual salmon dinner at the fair. And the menu was baked salmon, cooked new potatoes right out of the garden, and coleslaw with cabbage right out of the garden, all fresh. And then homemade bread, made the day before. And for dessert, she had ice cream with blueberry sauce. And the blueberries were picked by members of the club. Okay. And this put it in, I made it for many years. I've gone blueberry picking just incidentally, but I never made a project out of it, getting a big bowl of it. But the recipe we used was, this is for ice cream, vanilla ice cream, was 1 cup of blueberries to 1 cup of sugar. Put on stove, add blueberries, add a little bit of salt, and mash the berries, and just... Those are the ingredients mm-hmm. right there. And over vanilla ice cream, just wonderful.
And so you cook it down till it becomes like a sauce?
Yeah, yes. Okay. You don't cook it down till it's really dried out. No, it'll make a lot of sauce real fast. Just bring it to a boil and stir it and find a... an empty canning jar, pour it in there. That's it. So that was our...
I might try it.
Well, you must try it.
Yeah.
It's better than chocolate.
Oh, wow. Well, that's hard to beat then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds like a good meal, that salmon dinner.
It was a good meal.
And so was it a fundraiser?
The fundraiser. They started out charging maybe $5 or something then. But we had different committees to make the sauce, to get the grow the potatoes. And get the supplies for the coleslaw and to make the coleslaw. So we had a lot of little committees here and there. We got to know each other pretty well.
Yeah.
So that was another of Susie's projects.
You remember the names of some of the other women in the college women's?
Susie Swaim, Dorothy Beislein, Cora Cook, Kathy Jones.
Mary Binkley.
Mary Binkley was involved in anything that Susie or... You call Mary and ask her to help you on something, she never turns you down. Never.
And you... Anyone else?
And Rusty Hilton. From Hilton, Puppy and Calling.
Okay.
And there's Doreen. Deck was... Doreen was post... She wasn't the postmistress in college, but she worked at the post office desk. So everybody knew Doreen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Connie Griffith. She finally Connie was a teacher, and she lived on Geist Road. She finally decided to get serious with her life and packed up her kids, went outside to law school, so she could convert her community activities into a diploma, which she did, and she used it.
Good for her.
She got involved with a little community project wherever she lived. They moved outside, I'm not sure where they went. One of her sons, she was deeply involved in the arts, and her children, she encouraged them in those areas. But one of her sons was a real big, husky guy named Charlie Griffith. And he was the mechanic for the Discovery.
Oh, the Riverboat Discovery?
Riverboat Discovery, yeah. Yes. And the Binkleys had a Quonset hut in their backyard, and their house is now a veterinarian shop. Or office.
Oh, on Belaine Road?
Mm-hmm. No, on Geist Road. It's called Golden Heart Vet, right across from the Oasis restaurant.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Golden Heart.
Yeah, Mark May's vet
clinic. Dr. May.
Dr. May's vet clinic. That was their house, the Binkley's house?
Yeah.
Oh, how funny.
And their property went from University Avenue right back to the slough.
Mm-hmm.
So the first boat they had was a small boat. It wasn't big. But... Mr. and Mrs. Binkley started just a very small operation, but then it grew into that big operation.
Yeah, it's become a big operation. So that house, that's on what is now University Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
That was
the Binkley home.
Right, and that was part of college? That was still part of the college community? Okay.
College community reached out as far as we wanted it to.
Okay.
Mostly... That little area, that intersection area, was dry cabins during, and students mostly.
Yeah.
Going to university.
Yeah. And I know it stretched to the east down College Road. I didn't realize it went down towards University Avenue. That what we call the college.
Yeah, it's a narrow, deep lot.
Yeah. Okay.
But the Quonset hut was, I think, needs to be mentioned because, well, you know how people gather around for coffee clutches and for a cup of coffee. The women don't. The coffee clutches by the end of the day would be a beer sop.
Right.
Not for the women. No women were included. I was included in that a couple of times. Mostly young men or boys. They invited me, John Binkley, during the construction of the pipeline. John Binkley wanted to ride his motorcycle from Prudhoe to the tip of South America. So he was trying to get the Alaska people to give him the permission to do that. And so he asked me, or he called me and told me what he wanted, what he was up to. And he said, I said, you're never going to get permission from Alaska, because I had tried for him by going into their PR office, and I knew the two people there really well. And anybody in Fairbanks who was closely associated with John Binkley knew if he said he was going to, he would not cause any hazard. He'd be a very responsible citizen and all that stuff. And they wouldn't, they said, we can't be bothered. So,
so that's, you were working for Senator Stevens at that time, and the, so Hall, the Hall Road was still private, right? It wasn't a public road,
They didn't allow any private traffic.
So that's why he needed that permission.
He needed that authority. So he didn't know what to do, and he called me up and said he'd been turned down again. He said, well, you're going, I said, I'm going to be there, and maybe I'll see, Ed Patton, the bridge is named in his memory. He was the head of the Alaska construction. He said, well, you're going to see, you'll probably see Ed Patton when they, I don't know what it was, but they had the gathering on University Avenue, or at the airport, I guess, at the airport. So in comes the vice president of Alaska Pipeline Incorporated, and I was working for Ted Stevens, so I helped line up the local VIPs, and there's always some lady in town who wants to be at that. She needed to have a picture. We had a lot of competition for status in a smaller town, which is fine with me. So I knew who was going to be standing in line greeting Ed Patton. And coming into, the reason for the gathering was to meet and greet President Gerry Ford. He was coming up here to look at the pipeline. So I, you know, between Ted Stevens and me, we lined up the greeting. He told me where he wanted to stand. So I lined that all up. And Gerald Ford came. Everybody was very pleased that he took the time to fly. Ted told me once it took him 14 hours out of a day if he had to come to Fairbanks for an event. By the time he flew from Washington to Seattle to Fairbanks, it's a tough trip.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've managed to get myself right next to Ed Patton. And I said, Mr. Patton, I want to talk to you about something. About, I don't know what I said. I told him I wanted to talk to him privately if I could. He said, well, it's a good time right here. He said, who are you? He's a real rough guy. He said, who are you? I had a name tag. I said, I work for Ted. I run his regional office here in Fairbanks. Well, what do you want? I said, I have a friend, very responsible young man, who wants to ride his motorcycle from Prudhoe down to South America. And he had some negative remarks, like, who wants to do a goofy thing like that? Because there are no services. Riding a motorcycle is a challenge mm-hmm. on a dirt and gravel road. So I said, no, they're responsible people. His father was in the legislature, talked about that a little bit. I said, very, get a lot of good comments about him. So we chatted just a little bit more. I told him who I was, nobody of importance. I just work in the office there for Ted and help. I said, it's just a constituent case as far as I'm concerned. So we left and I got no permission. The answer was no, very firm no. I said, that's your firm no. Yeah. I said, I don't want anything to do with this. You can't do it. He said, all the reasons that my people have told you are what I would tell you about safety and flying gravel. And anyway, it was pretty discouraging. So I went back to John, and he and his boys got together over in the Quonset hut. And John told him the bad news. He couldn't get the permission. If Ted had asked Patton, he probably would have said yes, but then he really didn't want to deal with it. So when I told, and John also had, there were people who had motorcycles would get together like in the shop, the Quonset hut shop, have coffee or shoot the breeze, whatever, drink whiskey. And there were a couple others like that who were into motorcycling. Mm-hmm. One was at the airport. So John had already been talking with them, telling them what he wanted to do. Oh, yeah, we'll help you any way we can. Sure, John. No problem. We'll get you up there. So I didn't know that, but when I told John that Ed Patton said absolutely not, he had that backup, his backup plan, which was to fly in a Herc, because they flew during pipeline. There might have been 3 or 4 Hercs over the house, but in that short time, mm-hmm. they were the basic transportation at the time.
You mean 3 or 4 a day?
Hmm?
3 or 4 a day?
Mm-hmm. Or the time we're sitting here.
Wow.
I mean, they were just over. And over.
It was constant.
And back, empty, over. Oh. Yeah. So I said, I guess the only way for you to do it is just go hitch a ride
with the Herc?
With the Herc, what's his name? Berg.
Ed Berg? No.
Neil Berg?
Neil
Berg.
B-E-R-G.
Oh, yeah.
H. If you go, you'll have to talk to Neil Berg, I guess. He said, well, I've already talked to some of them. So they had it all planned as a backup plan. If he just showed up there with his bike and got on a Herc, nobody would say anything. So that's what happened. You should get John to talk about it someday if you can. Yeah. And so he was real disappointed that he couldn't do it legally. Ended up he did do it legally. And so he went to the airport and went out to the most likely ride, because they had crews to load, crews to unload, and all kinds of people. The one most likely was the one he chose, went out there. He went there dressed as he would driving down the road. It's pretty cold. It was summertime. Still pretty cold in the Arctic.
Yeah.
in the summertime. So he just got on his bike and headed out to the airport. I don't know who the... There's one man, I think, was in on the plot, but he didn't fly that day. And he swears he took me up there one time, the loadmaster. Mm-hmm. He got real close to the loadmasters.
Those are the guys to know.
And this guy, you know, the guy that drives the bus to the Pioneers go to Delta?
That guy?
That guy. He was a loadmaster.
Holy cow, that guy's a character. He's got a voice on him that's amazing. A very low baritone.
Yeah. Anyway, he was a loadmaster on one of those crews. And he told me one time when we went, he drives bus for Northern Alaska tour. Mm-hmm. And so after we got back from Delta one time, he started talking about it. He says, well, you remember when I took you up there? I said, were you the pilot? No, he said, I was a roadmaster. I said, I didn't go with you. Oh, I think you did. I think your memory is getting...
But so they helped John get up there.
God knows how many people that flew up there illegally.
Yeah.
Anyway, John got on his bike and rode out to the hangar. And the loadmaster and his crew put his bike on board up near the bulkhead. And he said, okay, you can go up there. And there was a visitor seat or something in the cockpit. So he got up there. Rode in the cockpit, which was good for him because he was a pilot himself, uh-huh. John. He had an extra seat someplace. I don't know where it was. So I asked him when he told me he was going to take his backup plan. I said, good luck. And being a backup plan flying north in those days was not unusual, mm-hmm. You know, but not in a hurry with a bicycle.
I'll get that gentleman's name. Barb Pearson knows him real well. He goes to Fairbanks Lutheran Church. He's there every Sunday. Mm-hmm. I think his name's Ed.
Okay.
So I said, when you get back to town, because this was all, just show up or don't come or meet me a certain place. And it would go. I said, when you get back to town, call me. So he called me and said, I'm back. I said, where are you? He said, I'm in the shop. I said, who else is there? Because I could hear glasses clinking. And I said, it's a Binkley shop. Yep. So I drove down there and got in on the beer party.
That's good. And then did he keep going and go all the way to Mexico? I mean, to South America?
He went to Peru. And he had to have cooperation with the loadmaster up there. I think he was named something else. But anyway, they go over there to the airport, or land at the airport. John comes out of the cabin with the crew. Which was unusual for these guys. Well, I'm sure they'd flown some of their girlfriends up.
Well, I'm surprised he was able to go down the road from Pluto that somebody didn't stop him.
He tried to. John's real smart, real bright.
Yeah.
Before he went up there, he got the loadmaster in Fairbanks to get as much information as he could on the name of everybody on the crew up there and their schedule and how it worked when he got up there. Mm-hmm. This guy, Ed, I guess his name is. They'd get off the plane and two or three guys would go do that, two or three guys would go do that. So John knew when he got up there what's going to happen.
Right.
He didn't know the people, but he knew what was going to happen. Where the bike was, would they take the bike, where they would take the bike. Because there were no bikes up there at all.
Right. So did John end up making it all the way to South America?
Yeah.
He did?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
He went to the very tip of South America.
He was probably, now everybody does that, but he was probably one of the first ones.
He was the first one.
Yeah. Cool.
He was the first one to ride a bike from Prudhoe to the tip of South America.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was a really rough trip.
I'm sure. Because that was in, what, the 70s?
It was...
Yep.
Yeah.
1975.
Okay. So did you have anything else about Susie Swaim?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got sidetracked because we were talking about the Quonset hut there behind that house, which is now a vet's clinic.
Right. So that's why it's bringing you back to Susie.
Yeah. She didn't get in on that plot. But of course everybody knew about it after a while.
Right.
They knew before it happened that he wanted to do that.
So she did the cleanup day and the Tama Valley Fair dinner. What other things?
The Women's Club was involved in everything. She encouraged us to enter our knitting and sewing, crocheting, everything at the fair. We helped a lot at the fair. Had a big attendance in those days.
Yeah, and it was a smaller fair probably than it is now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was more of a fair atmosphere.
Yeah.
Now it's just getting very commercialized.
Yeah. Yeah, it was more local things and handmade and things like that.
So anyway, when my phone was ringing, it said, "Hello, this is Susie." I knew there was a project coming. The other major issue I'd like to mention about, I'll try to be short-winded here. Sorry, I'm making noise.
That's okay. You're just cleaning your nose. That's not a problem.
Hurricane Katrina, I think it was 2012.
I don't remember the year. But anyway, Hurricane Katrina.
A few years ago, Susie was trained as a nurse. So she'd done a lot of volunteer nursing over the years.
Mm-hmm.
During World War II, she was a registered nurse. Army nurse. And she did the usual things they set her around here, different assignments. By that time, she'd met her husband and married. So they were stationed in North Africa. And she told me that most of her work was just regular. The usual, she was a medical ship.
Mm-hmm.
They picked up wounded soldiers. And most of her trip was just ordinary nursing, keeping people alive.
Mm-hmm.
So they go from North Africa over to the Italian shore and pick up injured GIs. And other people who were involved in the war, and go back to North Africa, and they just transfer them to a medical ship. So that's what she did all the time she was over there, back and forth. That's where she met her husband. I'm not sure what he is, or something in the paper. He was assigned over there as a. Can you remember that?
He was a steward. He was the steward on a Navy ship. He was the head steward.
Head steward on a Navy ship?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's where she met her husband, Claude. And so after the war, they married. He wanted to come to Alaska, so they bought a ticket. I guess it must have been Pan Am then.
Mm-hmm.
Came up here. And they bought that little cabin. they're at the bottom of the steps. Mm-hmm. And they had three boys, two boys and a daughter, I think it is.
No, three boys.
Three boys.
Yeah.
Libby says three boys.
Three?
Yeah.
I think two of them might have been adopted. I know one was adopted. Well, all of them were, because they had no children of their own. So that was another thing she was involved in here, all for her life up here. Mm-hmm. So anytime there was an emergency, and we had a lot of emergencies, like floods up and down the Yukon, mm-hmm. they'd bring people in, fly people in from the villages. She'd be the nurse. Mm-hmm. It was mostly for Red Cross. So just about every spring there was a demand for some kind of medical up and down the Yukon. Susie was always there helping out. But then years went by and all kinds of events happened. The college, I guess the one reason I want to talk about, she was kind of the nucleus of the void. because we had no council or assembly to go to and mm-hmm. plead for help, putting stop signs up. And another thing she did was spearheaded the project to build Fun Time Park.
Oh, right. I remember reading that in the paper obituary. That's down in just off College Road behind Hot Licks.
Yeah.
Right.
Still there.
Yep.
The borough now operates the College Women's Club. They had to do all the maintenance. And so they went into an agreement with the borough to pick up their park and help maintain it. But that's where we go for a picnic afterwards, where the children can get their hot dog.
Yeah, it's on Hayes Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's still used, but that was another Susie project.
All right. Well, you said you didn't have a council or something. So the city of Fairbanks had a city council, but college was outside of the limits.
Yeah, the
limits.
Boundary was not out as far as college.
Right.
And every once in a while, somebody decide, well, we need water and sewer, we need telephones or whatever. Let's have a meeting with the city. So that would be the way to get, if you wanted to get people in college together for a message. The mere mention of joining the city just set them off. Didn't want that.
They didn't want that.
Never.
But eventually when it became a borough, it got incorporated, right?
That included there's a pizza shop there now. Used to be a hairdresser. Yeah.
The college it's corner.
No, it's not in the city yet.
No, but you're in the borough now. Like once the borough came, all of this college area,
everything
now became part of the borough. Yeah.
I think those are some of the things I wanted to tell you about Susie.
Okay.
She's a very modest person and was always busy with some kind of a home craft, making things out of paper, making Christmas cards, writing greeting cards to people.
Nice. Yeah.
So she took care of that just herself.
So you also said you wanted to say a little bit something about your Arctic Sisterhood. So before you get too tired, do you want to say that?
Well, there are a lot of the people I know belong to the Pioneers of Alaska, whose purpose is to preserve the history and relics of the past. So there are several members of the club who are interested in that. And so A lot of us have been to Dawson, and they start talking about the history of the Dawson and the Klondike. The name Arctic Brotherhood pops up all the time. Mm-hmm. So we had decided to make a trip on the 40 Mile River and the Yukon River to celebrate Crystal McQuestion Morgan's 98th birthday.
Okay.
So we did that. And somewhere along the trip, we were talking about, I guess somebody asked, how come there's not an Arctic Sisterhood? There's Arctic Brotherhood everywhere. So going down the 40 Mile River, I said, okay, we're going to form the Arctic Sisterhood. There are enough of us here. So we did.
Great.
Well, if that was the official declaration. Mm-hmm. We talked about it a little bit earlier. So I made those sashes because Arctic Brotherhood and the early Yukon pioneers had these sashes with their initials on them.
Yeah, I've seen photos of all of them in a big group when they get together.
So since we're going to be the Arctic Sisterhood, I made our own banners. So this picture shows that. Mm-hmm. I have another picture here of all three of us. One member of our charter group couldn't make it because she lived in Berkeley.
Okay.
She was Jack McQuestion's daughter. And she was living in the house that he bought and planted his family in.
Mm-hmm.
In 1894, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you talked a little bit last time about the McQuestions because of your tree out here named for her, right?
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah. So what did your Arctic Sisterhood, did you guys do things, or it was a social club, or just fun for you guys?
Social club, or just to get together and do things, mm-hmm. like old ladies do. Well, it was more than that. So we got in the car, drove to almost to Eagle, and we had a guide lined up who could furnish the float boats.
Oh, this is when you did the 40-mile trip.
We had it already lined up.
Right.
We knew people in Eagle, and they helped us with this guide. He's been doing guiding for a long time.
Right.
And our service, he was very cautious.
So after you formed your Arctic Sisterhood, did you guys do stuff together here in Fairbanks? Mm-hmm. Like what?
Well, like going to Prudhoe.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Stepovich's, one of her many grandsons, was an executive type with British Petroleum. And he arranged for us to get through security at Prudhoe, because she told me, he just talked to the security people and said, here are the names of the three ladies come. They'll be in a white pickup with a camper. They'll be going up there a certain date. So he arranged all that. And so when we left town, we knew that we'd be well taken care of. So that was a big adventure.
Yeah. So the three of you did fun adventures and trips together as part of your Arctic sisterhood.
Oh, yeah. We were well cemented together.
Great.
We did a couple of things around town. But we went to, we got through through security up at Prudhoe, no problem. And we wanted to go out to the Colville River.
Oh.
Oliktok Point.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get up there. He said, where are you going? What's your business? What are you doing up here? So we told him we were just three old ladies out on a drive. He had our names. And so we got no problem going through security north. Going south, we came through the same security station. And then security man said, poked his head in the window, he says, tell me, what are you three ladies doing up here? I said, I was driving. We all went in my pickup camper. Mm-hmm. So I said, we're just on a trip.
So did you get out to Oliktok?
To what?
Did you get to Oliktok Point?
Yes.
Was there a road?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
There's a couple hundred miles of road at Prudhoe.
Okay.
Maybe could you get that big white cardboard? I have a picture of us at Oliktok.
So this was when you were already, well, you were in your 60s? You say you were old ladies. I don't believe
it. It was 89.
Okay.
That's when we formed in 89.
Okay.
We got back to town and said, well, what's our next trip? I said, where do you want to go? And Alaska Link said, I want to go to Prudhoe Bay. I said, okay. So that's when we got the permission.
That's
so cool. Coming out, after we'd been up there, coming back to get on the Hall Road, come back to town, we had to go through that same station.
Oh, look, she has a whole display on the Arctic Sisterhood. That's awesome.
Yeah, I could put a lot more on there.
Yeah, there you are at Oliktok.
There was a picture of us at Oliktok.
Yeah, and somebody's wearing a very pretty red... Is that Alaska Link? Wearing her red cuspuck?
Yes.
That's Alaska. That's a wonderful display. And who are these RCMP guys? Oh, they were serving you in a restaurant.
That's another story.
Jack Williams
and Ken Murray.
Anyway, on going with the crowd there at Oliktok Point,
yeah,
we had to go back through that same security. So the security man looked at our permission pass. He says, how did you ladies get permission to come up here? They won't let anybody come. I said, well, this lady in the middle, she has a lot of stock in BP. Of course she didn't. Her grandson was an executive with BP. I never did figure out what his position was. But he was high position with Alaska. He was a lawyer, probably one of their staff lawyers, I think.
Well, it looks like you guys had fun together.
Oh, we did.
Because it says Oliktok, you went to Prudhoe.
Didn't you go to Russia?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is a good picture with you guys with your mosquito hats on.
Mm-hmm.
They went to the Aleutians.
Wow.
They went to Russia. They went where they wanted to go.
Yeah. Well, it looks like you guys were good friends.
Oh, yeah, we were.
It's nice to have a group of friends like that.
So, during one of our more deeply discussed organization, we wanted to keep it alive. So we decided we'd allow other women to join. And the requirements for joining were you had to have been living in Alaska at least 20 years, and that you shot a bear, or you took a river trip on the Yukon River, or you hiked the Chilkoot Trail. Some of the later ones were can't think. Every once in a while, we have to change the requirements.
Yeah,
because a woman we want to join us doesn't meet what we just went through.
Right. So those ones you just went through, you have to have met all of those, or just one of them?
one or...
You didn't have to meet all the requirements?
No.
Okay.
Well, there was one member. She's just attended one or two meetings. Sometimes we'd go out to Fairbanks Creek to the miners' meeting in August, and that would count as one of our meetings. So,
and the other meetings were in your house around the table drinking tea?
Mm-hmm.
Were your other meetings around the kitchen table drinking tea?
Mm-hmm.
Or something stronger?
Well, sometimes we'd go over to Jack Williams' office at Pioneer Park. And he'd invite us over. And he was trying to finance the reconstruction or some restoration on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
So he had invited all the pioneers to come over. Anybody who looked like he had deep pockets.
Well, I was thinking that you and your Alaska sisterhood might have sat around the kitchen table with something a little stronger than tea.
Nope.
Nope.
We never did. Not one of us drank anything with alcohol in it.
Oh.
But we'd meet every once in a while. And we had a couple meetings in Alaska Lynx Yard, backyard, by the old-timer building.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you'd get together and meet to plan your next adventure?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. It's a great idea. So what's the story of Jack and Ken in these mounted police outfits?
I told him about the security at Puno.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got very well acquainted with the three Arctic Sisterhood. So every once in a while he'd call and say, would the Arctic Sisterhood honor me with a short meeting someday next week? And well, we knew he was looking for money. I gave him a pickup truck.
That's nice.
Vuka gave him a $1,000 donation for one of the rooms.
Mm-hmm. But in this picture where they're in their RCMP outfits and on the board here.
Well, he knew about our trip to Pluto because we met with Jack a couple of times. His little coffee clutch over in his office. So he knew that we'd gone up there and couldn't get permission, but we went anyway. That was the case for us, too.
Uh-huh. Because here you are at Fairbanks Creek with them.
Yeah, it was later, probably August.
So they were coming to arrest you guys for your illegal...
No, we were out at... We'd have a camp out every once in a while. We'd go out to Fairbanks Creek and camp out, and you had to wear something that you wore on the trail. That's why we're in jeans or bibbo overalls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just an opportunity to get together with some of our friends. And one of them, we required that if you used a tent, you had to bring it out and use it, sleep outside in the tent. So that brought up a lot of conversation. But Jack knew about our getting through the security up there at
Puto.
Well, the Mounties during the Klondike had to have 2,000 pounds of supplies, and we did not meet that requirement. So he cooked up that. I told him we were going to have another camp out at Fairbanks Creek. And he was welcome to. Said you can't be a member, but you could be an associate member because by that time we had decided that the men who wanted to be an Arctic Sister we could accept them, but the requirements he had to meet.
So Jack and Ken came out to Fairbanks Creek as a joke in there.
So Jack had been active in theater here.
Oh, okay.
And he got his RCMP outfit from mm-hmm. the theater group. And Ken Murray found that outfit he's wearing in Seattle, a costume shop in Seattle. So they knew it was a big joke, but because we met with Jack and told about right. our trip over the Chilkoot, and he knew all about the Vuka didn't. I was saying, oh yeah, and Vuka didn't have any. She didn't have her $2,000 to pay to them. So you know, it was just a goofy joke.
Yeah.
And so he knew exactly where we were going to be and what time. So we go out there and have our camp out, and he got there about an hour late. So everybody who was coming was there. So Ken had a Blazer pickup, and it was dark blue. And he had a sign made, RCMP, a magnetic sign.
Oh, yeah, it's on that picture there, yeah.
So they knew what time we were getting together, so they drove out there and came down the road in that outfit.
That sounds like you have good fun.
It was a good prank.
Yeah.
And so they got top of the hill, and then there's still 8 more miles to get from there to the Sipovich camp. So he tooted his horn, so I knew I could hear the truck coming. But here came this Blazer, typical dark blue for police car. And they came up the driveway. I couldn't believe it. They'd gone to all that trouble.
So fun.
He came up and stopped, and he said, we came here to arrest a lady named Vuka Stepovich. Her camp. And so we got her to come out, and she looked at the RCMP, and she knew what that was. And then they get out dressed like that. She was kind of flustered. Vel, what do you want? She says, Ken said, well, I came to. We have a warrant here for your arrest. He said, you were in Prudhoe Bay August 2nd or 3rd or whatever date it was, and then you went out to Electoc Point, and he said that you're not allowed to do that. You have to have permission. Oh, we have permission. So they chatted back and forth. Vuka was looking at him. Pretty soon she started to laugh, and she said, Phil, I know you. He said, well, yeah, I'm your insurance man.
Ken Murray, insurance, yeah. Yeah.
She'd been buying insurance for him for years.
Well, so everybody had a good laugh.
Oh, yeah. It was a great joke.
Yeah, that's fun. That's a great story.
And that was the only one that we kind of staged, but it was fun.
Yeah.
We have very good memories of it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, say, good friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I was thinking maybe we should end for today. You want to have anything else about the Arctic Sisterhood you wanted to talk about?
Well, yeah, one thing.
Okay.
Our youngest member met the requirements because she shot a bear.
Wow.
Killed it. Her family, that was Lori Miskovich. They were mining up at near Coldfoot. She said that they'd been sitting there, they were just finishing dinner at their mining camp, and the topic at the table was bears. And her father, he'd lived up there all his life, and he was telling them what to do if they saw a bear. They'll kill you if they get you first. So he said, you better have a rifle with you or a powerful pistol. So she left the living quarters and walked out a boardwalk to the meat shed where they kept their moose and other things. And she got out there near the end of the wooden sidewalk, and a big grizzly came around the corner.
Oh.
And so she had her .357 Magnum, that's a powerful pistol.
Yeah.
And she shot it and killed it.
Wow. Pretty good.
So she qualified.
Yeah, I'd say so.
But most of these members have been in Alaska a long time, so they have some really good historical memories.
So I know that Alaska Link and Vuka Stepovich are no longer with us.
No, they died.
But your other members still around? You guys get together?
Vuka has a lot of grandchildren. There are a lot of relatives.
Yeah.
Tell Karen when we get together at the yearly memorial picnic on Fairbanks Creek. Vuka's memorial picnic.
Vuka's memorial picnic?
Every August.
Is that part of the Arctic Sisterhood?
Well, we started it, but we call it the miners' meeting. Miners in different mining districts get together once a year, usually 4th of July.
It's Vuka's memorial picnic.
Yeah, it's Vuka's memorial picnic.
It's
so,
a big
gathering, I would think.
And the miners who mine out there relatives of the Stepoviches and relatives of others who mine out there get together and bring something for the potluck.
Yeah.
A great big picnic.
Yeah, nice.
It's really nice. Yeah, really good.
But so you still have members of your Arctic Sisterhood?
Oh, yeah. I think we have about a dozen.
That's where they get initiated.
Oh, they get initiated in Vuka's memorial.
We have a yearly meeting. Right, Mom?
Yeah, now we're having it every August.
Uh-huh.
On Fairbanks Creek.
Yearly meeting and new members get initiated.
Okay. Well, Libby, I'm assuming you're a member.
I'm a member.
One of the acts of the initiation is to sprinkle our new members with holy water. With Arctic Sisterhood.
Which is what, Mom?
Yeah, I was going to say, tell me, what's the holy water?
Yeah, well, in 2015, Libby and I went to Peru, and we came back with a 5-gallon jug of Arctic Ocean water.
Oh, okay.
So we now initiate with Arctic Ocean. Oh,
I was going to say, was it Yukon River water? But Arctic Ocean water is even better.
It's goofy. Just goofy.
It sounds fun. That's great.
It is fun.
It's a great story, too. So any more to it, or we...
Let's see. I went out to Aleutians for a couple of years, and the Arctic Sisterhood came, all of them came out there except Crystal. She couldn't travel. So we had a meeting out there.
So were you just visiting the Aleutians, or you were working out there?
Yeah, I went out there for a couple of years and worked.
Oh, doing what?
Well, I organized a reunion of World War II soldiers.
Okay, yeah.
Have been stationed out there.
Okay.
But you basically worked for the city of Unalaska, didn't you?
That's what I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they hosted the city and the two or three of the big canneries hosted it.
Right.
Got a couple hundred, I think about 150 or 200 vets came up for it. That was real emotional for them.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them hadn't seen each other since the war.
Yeah.
And they go, they say, well, there's a bunker right up there where I spent Christmas or something. They could talk as you drove them around.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And we brought up a lot of stuff that they didn't have usually.
Yeah.
They had boxes, crates of fresh fruit and vegetables.
Right.
And we had a program, kind of a loosely defined program where we'd have somebody as MC. We didn't know him until he got off the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mayor kind of set up a little welcome program. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of planes of, well, there was one whole charter of Alaskans who came out for that. A lot of them from Southeastern, from the canneries.
Oh, right.
And these GIs were all part of one big group in the Army, battalion, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
And they were from Arkansas. Hmm. Arkansas. Up in Alaska. So they signed up for this. Or they had been drafted, so they went wherever the Army told them to go. So all of a sudden they were called up for active duty. So they got, I don't know, a huge group of Arkansas and Alabama boys.
Mm-hmm.
Said, you're going, some of you, you're going, we don't know what your orders are yet. It was either Pacific or Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So they get out to San Francisco or someplace, and they line everybody up and they say, everybody from you that way, you can go, you make up your mind today if you want to go to the South Pacific War Zone or the Aleutians. Who wants to go from to the Aleutians, you know, from Alabama? So this guy said, we were signed up here and we suffered a lot. So their men up here suffered a lot. The cold and the wet. The living conditions were miserable. And so a lot of us wanted to go to the Pacific where it was nice and warm. He said, actually, we were the lucky ones because we survived.
Yeah.
The ones who went to the South Pacific mostly were killed.
Yeah. What year was that reunion? Do you remember?
Yeah, 1992.
Okay. Well, we could talk more about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have some notes on it someplace.
Okay.
We had
Libby?
Huh?
Whatever you're doing back there is coming out on the microphone. Sorry.
You're being requested.
I was requesting her to be quiet.
I just finished. Sorry.
Sorry. Of course, now we're probably done, but... Anything else you want to talk about?
Anyway, this one fellow kind of took over as an unofficial leader of the group. He was from Arkansas. He said, we complained and bitched because we had such miserable assignment. He said, actually, we were the lucky ones because most of the other group didn't come back.
Yeah.
It went to South Pacific. He was a big man, real thick, booming voice. I said, how come you Arkansas boys are in a Mississippi aircraft? He said, well, our commander there in would not give us permission to use their cargo plane to come up to Alaska. So he just told him, nope, you're not going to do it. So he said, we went over to Mississippi and talked to that man and said, we need an airplane. Here, you know, 50 guys want to go up where they were in World War II. He said, your commander won't, he said, heck, Mississippi will help you. They gave him a C-130.
Wow.
And they flew that to Anchorage. And then they got on a charter plane, which was more versatile. Because if you fly into Unalaska, you come down from the clouds, around a volcano or two, come down, and the airstrip is, there's a big mountain right here, Ballyhoo Mountain. And they just come in, down through the clouds, come down, and try to hit that runway. It's a real dangerous approach.
They have to do a pretty steep drop to get there,
Real dangerous approach.
Yeah, during World War II, I don't know if Revolution...
Oh, you're talking World War II?
Yeah, Reeve Airlines wasn't flying yet, I don't think.
I don't think so.
Okay, so this is the end.
Okay.
Except one thing about Susie. When Katrina hurricane hit south, they were looking for volunteers. And here she was, 90 years old. She went down to Red Cross here. They signed her up again. They knew her because she always volunteered on things. Sent her down to New Orleans, I guess. And here she was, an accomplished and experienced nurse. They sent her down there to New Orleans and with her Red Cross credentials and nursing credentials. And they said, well, we need people down there. You know, so they sent her over to another table. All she did was paperwork. Mm-hmm. She didn't take care of anybody. But she was there.
Good for her.
Yeah. She's 90 years old.
Wow. Cool.
Didn't she used to go work on the cruise ships and teach knitting? She took that up as a little excuse to travel. I remember hearing about that. She would get little gigs on some cruise ships and teach knitting.
And take her husband and go on a cruise. I hadn't heard that.
Well, I know there are people who do lectures and things on cruises, but I haven't heard about teaching knitting. That's kind
of cute. She did a lot of craft work.
Yeah. Mm. All right.
Okay, end of...
End of today?
Today.
Okay. Thank you very much.